Are we talking about X-Men today?
You know it.
Today is all X-Men all the time.
Man, let's get our
I'm gonna
X-Men
be real
list.
with you. It's gonna be like 90% Hickman.
Well, we will talk about the comics. We've got like 10 movies to talk about.
I said 90% Hickman's X-Men.
10 movies?
Yeah, the highest gross, the ninth highest grossing film series of all time. Sorry, 13 films. My bad.
There are 13 X-Men movies?
Let's see,
Technically.
X1, 2, 3,
Yeah.
First Class,
Yeah.
Second Coming, Apocalypse,
Yeah.
and then I guess you have to count the Wolverine movies, so Origins, The
I guess.
Wolverine, and Logan,
Yeah.
And then Deadpool.
And
And then the
then
Deadpools.
do you count? Yeah, I guess you would have to count
And then
Deadpools 1 and
New
2,
Mutants. And
and
then New
New
Mutants.
Mutants,
Yeah.
which I don't think anyone wanted to count, but here we are.
We'll talk about New Mutants when we get there, but money on the table is what I'll call it. So yeah, let's wrap up the X-Men. I think we're all of a similar age where our first introduction to the X-Men was the 92 cartoon series.
100%.
Jim Lee's run.
Ah.
Whatever, you fucking hipster.
Yeah, Josh was
I
there
know,
before us.
I am the hipster. I was that was my it was crazy 'cause like when the X-Force, X-Men, Excalibur, all the big re-release of all the X series in the early 90s, that was my real introduction to the X-Men. And then the comic book cartoon series happens, and then it was just synergy for X-Men. It was good synergy.
Yeah,
Heard.
Matt, let me ask you a question. Since Josh was busy reading Jim Lee comics
Like a
as a
nerd.
child, were you aware, number one, of comic books, and number two, of where to get comic books?
So I knew comic books existed. I never read them, but I would see them at like bookstores or in magazines, like you could order them, or sometimes even the grocery store or just
Area
like
General,
convenience
yeah.
stores, like back when they actually had the racks. But I never bought them or anything because as a kid it just wasn't what I was into. I was into games. And I was just like, honestly, I was more like I was aware comics existed, but I didn't know that all of the stories I was loving in the TV shows were being pulled from the comics. You know what I mean? Like I didn't know that the arcs in X-Men and Spider-Man were based on comic stories.
Yeah, I don't think I was aware about comic books or even where to get comic books until I was in my early teens.
Yeah, you always were a slow learner.
I was a slow boy.
Oh,
Honestly, that's not super far off because when I was younger and TV shows vanished, for the summer I was like, I guess it's over forever.
yeah, the concept of it'll come back next season was very difficult to comprehend as kids.
So let's, I guess we'll start with the comics. Matt, we know you love Krakoa.
No, let's end on comics,
Let's
'cause that's bigger
okay.
for us.
All right, so let's end on comics. So we have three cartoon series to talk about. We have X-Men the Animated Series, which adapted an awful lot of the comics runs that had preceded it.
We have X-Men Evolution, which revamped and modernized the characters for a new generation and made them younger. And put them all in high school, which at the time was in vogue, you know?
Yeah, and I think X-Men Evolution's underrated. I'll just go out
I
and say
agree. I love X-Men Evolution. It got killed off too soon. That ending that teased what future stories could have been. Ah.
And then
But
we
that
have.
whole and then we have the true underappreciated gem, Wolverine in the X-Men, which just like Spectacular Spider-Man, was a victim of Marvel. Or of Disney buying Marvel and then wanting to move all animation in-house.
Yeah. I guess I'll start with X-Men 92, X-Men the Animated Series. Give us your thoughts.
Joshua.
Oh,
Best theme ever.
best theme of the
yeah.
bunch.
Fun. It was fun, campy. It was a great reference tool for me when I was like really diving deep into X-Men because I was wondering where some of these stories were being pulled, and especially when they started doing like the Phoenix Saga. I just really liked more, and I also got really excited when they started having like X-Force characters in there, because I was reading a lot of X-Force when I was younger. You know, the Jim Lee run of X-Men is great, and Omega Red and Maverick, those characters really shining. And then, I don't know, I really liked the X-Force run a lot, and even X-Factor with Havoc. But yeah, when they started having those things appear in the television show, the cartoon, it was like awesome. It was like, oh, I just read a comic about this, and I just read these characters, and I did this, or I'm going to go look for these books in the comic book store. And then that's when I really started learning about like comic book pricing at a young age real quick, because I would want to get like certain runs, and like you just couldn't do that if you didn't have the funds. So, but then, you know, it really also got me really big into comic cards as well, because that was a good way to learn about characters. But yeah, I'll tell you that X-Men series one run. Look, you know, I know I dog on Jim Lee a lot, and I've talked about this multiple times on many shows about how, you know, Jim Lee in the 90s was amazing, but like, he's never really changed his style, or he's never really evolved. He still draws everyone the same way. But I don't know. What Jim Lee did to the X-Men and expanding the X-Men, and I don't even remember if the stories were that great. I just remember everything looked like really cool, and I really... I'm going to go into a kind of like an appreciation with like even the comic book cartoon series did that bold line drawing. I love that style. I love that look of just bold, thick black lines. I think it looks really great for comic books. I know that was a lot.
Matt?
Stop. What's up?
You know, what, I mean, your thoughts
on
X-Men the animated series? The thing
I know, I'm just talking about the.
God,
it was so formative, you know. Like, I mean, there and for so many people, the fact that you can look, so many people can look back on it with such extreme nostalgia, and it more or less holds up. I mean, it's become way more campy now, looking back on it, but it doesn't make it bad.
Right.
And also just the sheer breadth of storylines, and I will tell you, nothing is more iconic than previously on X-Men. Like, that is the most iconic phrase in my mind, because it very few shows were doing multi-episode arcs where everything was built upon each other. Mm-hmm. And they were getting heavy, man. They did not shy away from the social aspects of fucking X-Men. They were like, here are some racist-ass humans being racist-ass bitches to the X-Men. Like, and they, and even though some characters got the shaft for various reasons, whether it's Iceman, Colossus, or Nightcrawler, like, they really only got brief glimpses in the show, or Kitty Pryde, who never even showed up. But for the most part, it was like, it was such a good way to expose people to some super obscure characters. But because I was exposed to them in the X-Men cartoon, then when they would pop up in cartoon and comics, I'm like, holy shit, I remember them. And I think that that's exactly what the cartoons were supposed to do outside of selling toys, was, you know, prep a new generation for comics. And it worked. Yeah. Like, I fucking knew who Calypso was and the Morlocks. You really think those were AAA characters back in the day? Like, hell no. But I mean, just so much good in that show. The less said about the final season where they change animation departments, the better.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone talks about the final season of that show.
Exactly. Like, well, at that point, we all just moved on.
We're going to talk about a lot more when X-Men 97 comes out.
Well, that's true.
Which will be the sequel series to
X-Men. Yeah, and I'm super fucking excited about that.
I'm cautiously optimistic.
Nah. Look. Disney does not go wrong with Disney Plus animated shows. Point to one where they fucked it up.
I'm just saying it's very hard to go back to a property 30 years after you did it with the same voice cast. That's what bothers me the most.
That's well, they be can't do all of the same. Didn't we lose Beast or someone?
I think we lost Beast, but we got Wolverine back, and then we got... I think the rest of them are back.
Good. Fuck it.
I don't...
You're well, all professional no. voice actors.
Matt, if you had listened, if you've listened to the later episode of The Simpsons, you know that voices die.
Well, you know what? I have met enough of them at Comic-Cons to know that they still got it.
Marge is so unpleasant to listen to nowadays.
Well, Chris, here's all that matters. Can Cyclops scream Gene, and can Gene go, huh, and faint? Because that's really all you need, buddy.
Yeah, they really did Gene dirty in that show.
They really did. Well, that's they had to find ways to make all the powerful characters just bitch out, because otherwise the fights would be over too fast.
Also, they couldn't really throw punches. It was a lot of throwing.
Yeah. And also, Wolverine, for having the sharpest claws around, really did a lot of punching and judo kicks.
That's true.
He was really only allowed to fight robots.
It was a lot of judo. Yeah. All right. So then we jump forward in the future to X-Men Evolution.
Wait. Hold on. I want to say one more thing.
Oh, sure.
Shout out to Storm's fucking monologues every time she wants to throw a lightning bolt.
You know who had A-plus monologues on this program was Apocalypse.
Oh, of course. Apocalypse had some fucking Optimus Prime level speeches.
The one that always makes me laugh is, you are no closer to defeating me than the Babylonians were with their swords and fire sticks.
Yeah.
Fucking got them.
So good.
Whenever Apocalypse showed up recently on Krakoa, that's the voice I hear.
Of course. Oh, that's the voice that just, yeah.
That's my favorite. Oh, yes. So we jump forward to X-Men Evolution. We've de-aged the team, except for Wolverine and Storm. We've de-aged the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. We put them in high school.
Yep. I love the fact that this is pre-everyone knowing what mutants are. And so it's the Brotherhood being joined together and the X-Men training together. And they all also go to a local public high school.
Yeah.
And Senator Kelly is the principal.
Yeah. Mystique was like they were running a shadow war between each other until the third season, when they were just like, mutants are out.
But that's what made the show so good, because they had set up keeping the secret for so long that when they finally got outed, there was so much like fallout to that. And it felt so cool seeing them on the run. Like that whole season where they're all on the run and everything, and like all the old, their classmates and stuff were like, holy shit. Like those moments were great. Yeah. And also this really elevated Rogue as a character.
Yeah. It was a bold decision they took from the movies to depower Rogue, kind of, you know, gave her her base mutant powers and not any of her super powers.
Yeah.
And
she had the ability to steal people's abilities.
And that led to some great... She had a very great episode towards the end where her powers went out of control.
Yeah.
Criminally underrated, I think. It was a very good program.
I agree. And you know what? It also gave us a lot of new characters because this came out later. It's got to showcase some new mutants that didn't exist when the early 90s show came out.
Like Boom Boom. Boom Boom was a big character.
Boom Boom and Berserker, and just some of the younger characters like Sunspot and stuff, like that never got to shine in the original. All the younger characters got to play because the show really excelled when the original characters got older. And they brought in the new kids that train under them. Also, shout out, this show created X-23.
It's true. Renowned new Wolverine, X-23.
Yeah, she started off in this show, and it was a great episode.
Yeah. Josh, did you see X-Men Evolution? I'm sure you didn't, because you were very cool.
X-Men Evolution was great. Caitlin watched it. That was one of the first things we watched together when Disney Plus came out, was she watched all of X-Men Evolution, and it was a great rewatch.
Frame of it, it's like, yeah, I was a freshman in college going to ska shows. So yeah, I'm cool.
That tracks. Ska will never die.
You know
this
what?
This is not a phase.
You know what? It's very cool still. fucking ska shows. Okay, so then we jump ahead again, and we get to Wolverine and the X-Men.
Yes. So, this so good.
It's a very good show. And it takes a lot of the most recent era, Emma Frost being on the team.
Exactly. And also, just like Evolution before it, a lot of new characters that never got experience. Like in the opening episode where Dust shows up. Man. And they rescue Dust and she kicks ass.
Remember when Dust was a real character and we haven't seen her since?
To be fair, she does exist in the New Mutants series of the Krakoa era. We just don't read it.
Oh, that's a good point. Okay. I like Wolverine and the X-Men. It was a 26-episode series. It was one of these progressive storylines that built up. It was really done dirty, like said by the merger, and
because it ended with the most amazing cliffhanger.
We were promised an Age of Apocalypse. So the gimmick was that half of the series was Charles Xavier of the future trying to prevent a disaster, and they do, and then the final episode is him saying, oh wait, we've made it worse, and it's the Age of Apocalypse, and I need you to stop it.
Yep. Basically. They thought they were stopping the Sentinel future, but by doing so, they created the Age of Apocalypse, and how do you fucking just end on that?
That's a brutal... When I've rewatched it recently, we hit that episode, and I was like, fuck.
I'm just saying, bring that back next.
I agree. I'd love for them to even do it. We'll see how X-Men 97 plays out. Then the X-Men decided to go into the world of movies. Really quick, because I know this one's going to be very short. Matt, best X-Men video games?
X-Men Legends.
Yes.
And the X-Men Legends 2.
Yes.
Obviously, X-Men and Spider-Man vs. Arcade.
Sure.
I have a soft spot for the really garbage Genesis X-Men game, or the Super Nintendo. I can't remember which one it was. Mutant Apocalypse or something?
That was Super Nintendo, I think.
But the true winner and the best game is X-Men Origins Wolverine. Was basically, they were like, what if we just didn't give a shit about the movie plot and made God of War, but with Wolverine in it?
Wolverine
it was absolutely phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal.
It's Wolverine versus helicopters. It's perfect.
It's got fatalities. It's beautiful.
And bonus mention to just Marvel versus Capcom, because it started as X-Men versus Street Fighter. X-Men will always be a big part of that franchise.
I'll throw out some love for the arcade game.
What?
I'll throw out some love for the arcade game.
Oh, of course. Yeah, that's an all-time classic. I mean, how much money did you pour into Celebration Station playing the X-Men arcade game at a friend's birthday party? Like, come on.
No comment.
Yeah.
So then we go to the films. Let's start with 2000's X-Men.
Okay.
This was our introduction to Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. It had the black suits.
Yeah, and because this was early 2000s, and this was the first movie to really prove outside of Blade that could prove comics could work. But because we were still in the before time, they were so afraid of anything that was actually comic booky. Which is why everyone's super bright costumes got swapped out for black leather. They even made a joke, a wink and a nod at it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the casting was spot on.
Oh, yeah.
I maybe would have replaced fucking Halle Berry. She was not great as Storm.
No.
But everyone else was really good. And
I would replace Tyler Mayne as Sabretooth. He's not a great Sabretooth.
And just make, what's his face from the other moons?
Yeah, I mean, he was just doing Scream at this point. You could get Liev Schreiber for a ham sandwich.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
But I really like this movie. I think Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart were very good in their roles. I thought the effects were totally fine for you know, 2000 superhero movie.
Yeah.
I think it did everything that you wanted it to do as an X-Men film, as a first X-Men film.
Yeah, I mean, and also just it proved that superhero movies could work, and not just a solo one, because before all we got was solo films. The successes were all Batman and Superman and eventually Spider-Man. X-Men proved that you could do a team and do it well.
Yes.
Yeah, and it worked out really well, and I think the casting of just of Professor X and Magneto were just perfect.
Yes, I agree.
I think they were. I think they were just
they're so perfect that they're still used today.
Yeah, and I don't know who did the casting of that movie, but it's just a crazy sauce. And yeah, Hugh Jackman is a great choice for Wolverine, and I know Hugh Jackman is just tired of being Wolverine, but
he really just wants to dance and sing.
Yeah, but yeah, that was a really bold move, and it really paid off.
He crushed it. Like, Wolverine was the most important character in this, and they picked the weird Australian guy, and he fucking killed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The good thing about Hugh Jackman, right? Like, he goes, he doesn't half-ass anything. He's just, you give him a role, he's like, all right, I got it.
How do we feel about Anna Paquin as Rogue?
It was different. I mean, she was very different from any animated version. I'm not a fan of how, like, meek they made her.
Yeah.
Especially with her wanting to get the, I mean, to be fair, she was a good, like, in person to introduce the whole concept of the cure. Mm-hmm. A girl that can't touch anybody. Of course she's going to want it.
Right.
But, I don't know, they really never did anything with her. She never improved over the movies.
No, and it took them like 15 years until Days of Future Past before they figured it out.
Yeah. Now, I will say that this movie really ushered in the era of movies, superhero trilogies can never stick the landing.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Because The Last Stand. Oh.
Well, hold that thought, because we got to talk about X2, X-Men United.
Okay. One of the greatest opening sequences in superhero films. The Nightcrawler White House scene is still great.
Alan Cumming, so good that this was his only performance as Nightcrawler.
Yeah, it is kind of a shame because it's such a really great. It feels like Alan Cummings understood Nightcrawler. I don't know if it was the director choice or he just really understood the material, but I think he nails it.
It's important. It's important to note this first trilogy directed by bad person Bryan Singer.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's true. Oh man.
Yeah, this will date me. This is the first movie I downloaded off Kazaa while I was still in theaters because I really wanted to watch the attack on Xavier Mansion, and specifically when Colossus fucking trucks that dude through a wall.
Yep. That was such a cool scene. The whole attack on the mansion.
Very good stuff.
Oh, yeah. Fuck.
I love this movie. This is the one that I think about going back to. Like, the other X-Men movies I can take or leave. This is the one that I think about the most. So that brings us to X3, The Last Stand.
It sure was a movie, and I don't want to spend too much of our time on it because we still got to get to other stuff.
Yeah, it's bad.
It's their first swing and a miss of the Phoenix Saga, and it won't be their last.
No, and this is the movie that it really does Cyclops dirty. Like, he gets killed, and then no one fucking talks about him, and he has a tiny little grave.
Yeah, that year, decades later, that's still the shittiest part.
Marsters. I can never. There's like three of them with a similar name, and I can't get
James
them right.
Marsden.
James Marsden. Thank you.
The one from Sonic.
Yes. He really has X-Men movies have really made him a career of him being the milquetoast other love interest. Because I believe this same year he's in Superman Returns. Getting cucked by Superman.
Yeah. It was a bad year to be Jason Marsden.
I guess so. Yeah, this movie's bad. Don't watch it. They fucked up the Phoenix. And they have... the only bright spot, I think, is Elliot Page as Kitty Pride.
Yeah. And also the brief internet sensation that was "I'm the Juggernaut, bitch."
Oh, yeah. Man, don't
I
do
think
that.
This is the beginning. This is the beginning of like the internet really influencing things.
Yeah, they shouldn't. So that movie was a disaster. So they stopped, and then they were like,
"However, shout out to Kelsey Grammer's Beast. I thought he did a really good live action Beast.
Yeah. He was a great voice, but not a great a body.
Yeah,
yeah." So they decide they're going to do some smaller origin-based movies. We were supposed to get one with Magneto and then one with Wolverine, but they just went with Wolverine. X-Men Origins Wolverine.
So bad that the single early clip of Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool created a fan resurgence that gave us Deadpool.
Sure.
You'll forget that whole X-Force sequence is at the very beginning of that. I get stuck up on the fact that he gets shot in the head with an adamantium bullet, and that's how he loses his memory.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, that's just how it happens.
Liev Schreiber as Sabretooth is very good, though, and I like the opening sequence of them fighting wars throughout the ages.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's all right. Then we reboot the whole thing with X-Men First Class. We have Michael Fassbender as our Magneto, and we have... not Ewan McGregor. Who's the other one?
James McAvoy.
James McAvoy as our Charles Xavier. So yeah. What do we think about First Class?
Once again, two really strong movies, and then a shitty third attempt at setting up the Phoenix Saga.
Yep. I can't agree with that. That's
how do you feel about them setting it during the Cuban Missile Crisis?
Smart. I liked it.
Yeah, I think it's a good... I think X-Men in the 60s is a much better storytelling point. I really do, because it's a reflection of the fear that they had of communism, the civil rights movement happening. You know, it's there's a lot of good backdrop.
Yeah.
I am going to say one thing, because First Class has never explained it, and they deserve to get shit on all the time. They killed Darwin, and whether or not it's the fact that they did all their minority characters dirty. They killed Darwin, and then they made what was her name, Angel or Pix?
It was Angel.
They made her go evil, and made all the heroes white people. That aside, Darwin's literal purpose is his body can't die because it'll always adapt.
Yeah.
So. Being blown up by energy makes no sense because literally in the comics he was introduced with Vulcan as when he was exploded, his body turned to energy and reconstituted itself later on. Like, that's his comic book origin. How are you going to kill him that way in the movie? And I kept waiting. I was like, maybe the after credit stinger will be Darwin coming back and being like, that was crazy. No, they fucking killed Darwin. The one character whose ability is they can't die.
Yeah, not a lot of things makes me furious, but that the way they treated Darwin does.
Yeah, that still irks me decades later.
Yeah.
I still think Kevin Bacon is an amazing Sebastian Shaw, though.
He was very good. January Jones was a bad Emma Frost.
Yeah, awful. I don't even want to even start on that.
Matt, do you remember at Comic-Con we got the Magneto was right shirts?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good shirts. Then we have 2013's The Wolverine.
Sure, it existed.
Yep, it was real.
It was the
Wolverine solo films are the reverse effect of every other major superhero trilogy. Because it's the first two that are just like blah, and it's the third one that fucking is one of the best of all time.
I think the idea of them putting it in Japan, kind of playing off that, was a good idea. Just didn't execute for me.
Say that again?
I said I like the idea of them going to Japan and like playing off the Wolverine samurai stuff. It just didn't connect for me.
Nope.
He does survive Hiroshima though. And that's pretty cool. Then we have 2014's X-Men's Days of Future Past.
Amazing.
Very good. They finally got Rogue right. They showed a bunch of cool future fights with Bishop and Blink.
Although, again, bullshit. They killed the black character whose ability is to absorb energy by shooting energy at him. Both Darwin and Bishop get bitched out in the most nonsensical way. You could have killed Bishop in so many other ways, crushing him, cutting him, whatever. But energy, the one thing he whatever.
I'm just gonna
get heated.
Move on. You know it sounds really bad when you say it out loud like that.
I'm just saying, they only take their black characters and go, you know what? I don't care what his power is. We're killing him in the movie.
It's kind of true. Matt's not wrong about
this. It's true. This one also had what's his face from Game of Thrones? Tyrion.
Dinklage.
Peter Dinklage as Bolivar Trask.
Yeah. Creator of the Sentinels.
We're not talking about it because it would take forever, but the timelines they fucked with by trying to make these movies all in a timeline, disastrous.
Yeah, still fun, though.
Still fun, but a disaster.
Yeah.
Then we have 2016's Deadpool.
Great film.
Good stuff. Yeah.
A lot of fun.
Funny. Funny. Should prove that R-rated movies could work. R-rated comedies.
Yeah.
So good that Disney is not fucking with the formula, and we're getting a third R-rated movie.
Which is a great call.
Yes, I agree with all of that. A lot of fun. Only Ryan Reynolds could pull it off.
That's agreed.
True. So then we have 2016, also 2016, X-Men Apocalypse.
Yep, that existed.
We have Oscar Isaac as Apocalypse.
Oscar Isaac playing a Egyptian god.
Yeah, I don't
think that familiar.
That didn't happen. Oscar Isaac did not play Apocalypse. That's not real.
I'm sorry to tell you, my man. It's real.
Olivia Munn played Psylocke.
I actually really like her as Psylocke. She's not a good actress, but I still like her.
You know what? No, you need to watch Newsroom because she's fucking fantastic in that show.
Okay. Okay, I'll put that on my list of shows not to get to.
She's a good... Look, she's a good actress if she has the right directors.
Yeah.
And that's all I can say.
I think this is interesting. I'm sorry, go on.
No, I'm just saying, like, this is some actors. Some actors are really good with certain directors. I don't think Bryan Singer's a great director, so...
No. He's great at directing his penis and his small children.
Not children. The important distinction.
I thought it was.
No, it's just... younger dudes, but not children.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So sorry.
Thank you.
It's okay.
I apologize, Chris, the Bryan Singer apologist over here.
Wow, don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that. Please don't do that.
The other thing about Apocalypse is that we also got the new a new Cyclops, a new Nightcrawler, a new Jean, and Sophie Turner.
And that was fine. Yeah. And we got some great Quicksilver sequences throughout the trilogy.
Yes.
It's true.
2017, we have Logan.
That's great.
One of the best of all time.
Really great.
A really incredible movie.
Yeah.
Brutal, heartfelt. Even the weird CGI to get like a younger Hugh Jackman Wolverine out there. It's all incredible.
The black and white cut of that movie is just great.
I've not seen the black and white cut.
Yeah.
I haven't either.
That might be worth a
look. Do it.
Yeah. Then in 2018, we have Deadpool 2.
Deeply also really
silly.
Good.
Deeply really silly. Good.
Love what happens with him forming a team and they all die.
Yes. And I almost as good as getting, what's his face? Brad Pitt to play the invisible guy.
Yeah. Honestly, My favorite is Zazie Beetz as Domino.
Oh, yeah.
That's the best incarnation of Domino, like live-action Domino.
I think the whole scene about Deadpool going like, I don't understand the luck thing. None of it makes any sense. How is that a mutant power? How can you show that? What is it? And she's just doing everything that shows how the luck mutant power works. It's just fantastic.
And Cable was good too. Josh Brolin as Cable. Yes.
Yeah.
It was a fun movie. It was a really fun movie.
It's a really fun movie. Then we hit the Dark Ages. 2019, we have Dark Phoenix.
That happened?
Yeah, sure. We're taking another swing at that Dark Phoenix saga.
It never works.
The thing that blows my mind is it's the same writer as X3.
Yeah, they gave him a second shot.
And he directed it.
Yeah, but it's like, that movie fucked up. Well, we're going to try again. Let's get the same guy to write it.
Why not?
Like, why? Why not get literally anyone else to give it a shot? I don't get it. A movie is bad on a lot of fronts. The only good thing about it is that it has Dazzler in, like, the first scene. And I was like, yeah, thanks, Dazzler.
You're killing all of our time for comics, bro.
We're getting there. We got plenty of time to go.
Really, finally, this should be a two-part show now.
No, we're going to get to comics. Don't worry. Finally.
We are not going to have time to talk comics.
We have time to talk about comics. A bunch of old ladies. 2020, The New Mutants. Hit by COVID, and it's just not very good.
Yeah, there's so many directions they could have taken with that movie, and I think they just really dropped the ball on so many levels.
They tried, but it just doesn't work.
It has a great concept. The cast was good. It just, when you reboot and rewrite and retool everything over and over and over again and keep doing rewrites and reshoots, you're never going to come out with a good film.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
So, yeah, so now we're on to comics.
Oh, but it's time to go. Let's just wrap it up.
We've been going for 35 minutes.
That seems like forever.
Oh, my God. All right. So
okay, so I look.
Matt, talk about it before you burst.
No. I want Josh to go first because he read the Claremont, Jim Lee era, whatever. I never did. I never read comics until way later. And even then, X-Men never really grabbed me as a actual like ongoing series for a long time. Like, I think my favorite era in the early days was the Hope era.
Yeah.
The Hope Summers era where it started with like House of M obviously was huge at the time, but I wasn't reading it, the X books for it. But post that, that's when I got in, where it was like Disassembled and or it was a Dystopia. That was it.
It was Utopia.
And then it led into like Second Coming
you're talking about the post House of M and a couple of years removed from that.
Yes.
No, that's good because like I really stopped reading X-Men comics.
That's it. It was Messiah Complex.
Yeah.
Then it went to Messiah War, and then it went to Second Coming, which ended with Hope reigniting the birth of mutants. And then she got her own brief series where she had the Lights, which were the first five new mutants since House of M.
I think. But yeah. I don't know what happened to any of them besides for Itty. And Itty's like a bad person now.
Yeah. She's in hell with Sabretooth.
She's in mutant hell. But no, yeah, so X-Men have had a long line. We have the Silver Age. We have the rebirth with Claremont, who carried it throughout the 80s. And really, you know, all the things that we love about the X-Men come from that time period.
And also the Blue and Gold era, which is the Jim Lee era and the early 90s, really expanded the teams. And that's when you really start seeing some more real crossover story arcs. And I really enjoyed a lot of these crossover story arcs. Executioner Song was great. Fatal Attractions was great. The Fanlex saga was really great. Then Legion and Age of Apocalypse. It's just, and then you end it with Onslaught, and you're like, ah, Jesus.
Yeah, Onslaught was very indicative of the 90s running out of ideas.
Yeah, but like in the beginning, they were like really hitting some really cool things, and they really elaborated on the Weapon X program. But then, like, I know how much you guys are like gonna groan about Morrison. I loved the Morrison run. I really enjoyed the Morrison run because what he did with the Weapon X program and the characters he introduced. I
will say it's one of the best things that I think Grant Morrison has done, because I actually found enjoyment of him. I like that he created Danger as a character. Yeah. The Danger Room when sentient. Well, not a huge fan of Cassandra Nova. But we'll see if the new Marauders series can revitalize her.
No, Danger Room is Joss Whedon.
Joss Whedon. That's
was it? And, okay.
Yeah.
And I like Joss Whedon series.
The Whedon one's great because that's when Cyclops really shines. But what I like about the Morrison run is that Morrison gets Emma Frost.
Yeah. And that was the era where she became more prominent.
Yeah. So important to the story. And I think Morrison really got the backstory of a lot of things, loose ends that he wanted to put together, and then it kind of like crumbled around the end. But, you know, I stopped reading X-Men really after House of M, and then Hickman came around and like, look, this is what's up.
What I really like about Morrison is that the X-Men have always been big and weird, and he's just made them bigger and weirder.
Yeah,
and even if they're not things that I've personally read or things that I personally enjoyed, there's enough there that other writers can just pick up and run with it. That
like
Cassandra Nova or any of the other stuff, the stuff that happened, the genocide of Genosha, Kid Omega, you know.
Oh yeah,
there's a lot of really good stuff that's come from that. My era.
Oh, the Cook.
I'm sorry.
The Cuckoo Sisters.
Yes, my era of X-Men, the one that really grabbed me was the period of time where they moved to San Francisco.
Utopia.
Yeah, the Utopia. It was originally written by Brubaker and then by what's his name? Sex Criminals.
Fraction.
Matt Fraction. Yeah, they took over the reins for a long time, and I think getting them out of the New York area was kind of inspired. It gave them a lot of room to kind of work with and play. And the idea of a mutant-led society, I mean, we've seen how it's played out then and how it's playing out now. So there's a lot of meat to take from that.
Yeah.
But this also is the era of Avengers versus X-Men, which... really, and I mean depending on how you look at it, really puts the Avengers in a bad light.
Yep. Also, this is the era of Cyclops was right.
Yeah.
And his dope X visor.
Yes. Because there's that panel in the first issue of Avengers or X-Men where Cyclops calls out Captain America for standing by while mutants get shit on from everyone.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He's right. And I think a lot of Avengers fans don't like that because he is right.
I agree. I will say, I think the best pre-Krakoa book, and I think Chris would probably agree with me, is Wolverine and the X-Men.
That was a delightful book, Wolverine as the headmaster of the Jean Grey School. It had a bunch of cool new kids, including Brew, the future Brood Queen.
Yep. Edie was a big part of that one.
Man, Edie's such a fuck up.
Yeah. But I kind of dig it because, you know, it just shows just how fucked up a strict religious upbringing can make you.
Yeah. And that's interesting, but it's always frustrating because I really liked her. And then she always shows up. It's like, oh, yeah, I guess I'm in hell now because I'm a bad person.
I don't know. Wolverine and the X-Men was great. The art was amazing.
Yeah.
The storylines were great. So
there's been a lot of character assassination in the last 20 years. Bishop almost didn't survive the Messiah War.
Yes.
Where he genocided some reality so he could get to Hope. Have you ever read of them like talking about that, being like, oh, it's cool?
No, I don't think it's happened. I think it got wiped away with one of Moira's lives.
That makes sense.
I don't know.
Yeah, so, you know, the X-Men were on an upswing, and then right before Krakoa was the bleakest, most unfun
Age of X-Men?
No, not Age of X-Men. Age of X-Men had its own thing, but the Uncanny X-Men run while half of them were in Age of X-Men?
Yeah, that was bad.
That was brutal. It was just like, I believe it was Rain who was just beaten to death in the street by a bunch of bigots. It was a rough time. And then we get to Krakoa.
So before we start.
Yeah.
I just want to give a shout out. Because you know what I realized?
Hmm.
We never would have gotten Krakoa and Hickman and this golden era of X-Men comics if Disney never bought Fox. I looked it up. Disney bought Fox in March of 2019.
Huh.
Months before Hickman. And then a couple months later, Hickman with Dugan and Tini and a lot of the other people that are still being the architects of this new era to the retreat with Marvel, where he pitched the idea to all the editors and executives. And it's only because Disney bought Fox, because before that, Disney was doing everything they could to devalue the X-Men, because Fox wouldn't sell them the rights. Like, that's why we got the Inhumans being a big push, and all the X-Books were being canceled and consolidated. And the only reason we get this new era of an explosion is because the rights reverted back to Disney. So shout out to the Fox merger, because I never put two and two together until today when I was thinking about this.
Yeah, that's another thing that we weren't able to touch on, is that the X-Men were in real danger of being completely phased out due to, you know, internal politicking.
Yeah. Anyway, it was great.
Yeah, so now we're in the Krakoa era. Moira's a mutant. She's lived a bunch of lives.
Hickman doing his thing, which is taking... He's basically like Geoff Johns was at his peak with Green Lantern, mm-hmm. which is taking just one thing and tweaking it and completely rearranging everything else on its head. With Green Lantern, it was that there's actually an emotional spectrum, not just green light. And with Hickman, it's like, Moira is actually a mutant, and she's lived all these lives, and now this is her last chance to make things right.
Yeah, Hickman also, I think, has a knack for research as well. And yes. I think he respects the source material, and he wants to show you that he respects the source material. And that's what I love about him as a writer and as a content creator as well. I loved Black Monday Murders because there's just so much research that's in that book. And he's like, well, what if this is this? And what is this is that? Let's say this happens and this happens, or this happened. And I think Hickman's take on Mr. Sinister is just, it's the best part.
Yeah. But not only that, go, Chris.
No, go on.
No, just Hickman, like, he's done it through all of his Marvel series, like his Fantastic Four, his Avengers, his Secret Warriors. It's all about being such deep dives and doing some cuts and making some really high concept ideas that just work.
Yeah.
And in addition, one of Hickman's strengths, and maybe his weakness, depending on how you view it, is that he stretches the book out by having so much back matter in it.
Yes,
paragraphs,
I love it.
And charts and, you know, the sinister secrets and the notes from the FBI and other world governments.
Yeah, I love when we get the letters and the emails from the governments to each other, or the redacted Orcus correspondence.
It's a way to stretch out a comic beyond its like 20 something pages.
Well, also, it's an ingenious way to do exposition and world building without wasting pages of your comic.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Just those 2 pages of just notes and redacted notes and footnotes, just they tell so much of a story than just like a whole volume of just like comics.
It's so good.
So let's talk. What's your favorite stuff of the Krakoa era?
If I start, I'm not going to stop. So why don't you guys go first?
Okay. My favorite thing of the Krakoa era is twofold. Number one is
no,
the
Manifold is a different character.
I got it. Number one is the Hellfire Gala. Yes. I love, and I saw people online complain about this. I love having the mutants strut their stuff. I love the high fashion costume ideas. I love the Hellfire Gala. I think it's a ton of fun, and I like that they have a brief moment to kind of, you know, relax, so to speak, even though the Hellfire Gala is usually the springboard of a lot of other plot points.
Yeah.
And I
liked X of Swords. I thought X of Swords was really fun.
Yeah, I'm with Chris on that. That X of Swords, Hellfire Gala is great, and I love Inferno. I love Inferno coming back.
Oh, man. Inferno. Okay.
Let's go for it.
No, just the Hellfire Gala. I just today read an interview with Hickman, and they were talking about the retreat and just everything. This was right when Hickman was about to leave, like the series, and he was like doing this big interview, and they were reminiscing about all their favorite moments, and they talked about how they used the Hellfire Gala as a fucking smoke screen for Planet Size X-Men. They said that everyone on the internet was debating the costumes and talking about the costumes and the Hellfire outfits and cosplaying, that no one ever asked them, hey, why did you change the name from Giant Size to Planet Size X-Men? And so the entire thing of terraforming Mars was never spoiled or leaked because no one cared enough to look into it, because everyone was focused on the shiny new costumes and the Hellfire outfits. And like, that was by design, and I thought that was fucking amazing.
That's so clever.
It really is.
The knowledge that they terraformed Mars is like one of the took my breath away moments. The other one would be Moira revealing she's a mutant and showing off her 10 lives.
Yep.
Breath away moment, and that doesn't happen a lot in comics, not anymore, and not for someone who's been reading it as long as we have.
And I will say, I just went back on the Marvel app just to reread it, Marvel Unlimited, today for this episode, because the sequence where they're talking about the concept of the Xavier's asking Forge, like, what would you do? What would you need to do to revitalize a dead planet? And Forge is talking in hypotheticals while they're showing it actually happening. And they create using 10 Omega level mutants, 7 X-Men and 3 Iraqi. Or Arakai, combining their power. And that was one of the coolest things about this Krakoa era, is the concept of joining powers and combining powers to do unheard of and never before done things, whether it's the 5 with the resurrection protocols or the 10 fucking bringing a dead planet back to life and then claiming it as their own. Like, that's such a baller moment, because the Hellfire Gala beforehand was like 8 to 10 issues of every book talking about the same moment, which is the Hellfire Gala itself. And then each book is just talking about the Hellfire Gala from their characters' perspectives. But every episode issue always ended with the promise of the fireworks show. And then finally in the finale, we get this in Planet Size X-Men, we see what the fireworks show was, which is Emma Frost mind linking everyone and going, yo, we fucking colonized Mars. Suck a dick, humans.
It's so good.
So good. And like you said, X of Swords was great. I thought Powers and House of X showed off the concept so strongly. And Inferno was like the big twist where everything you can see everything falling apart.
Yeah.
And then it's all going to end with this next Hellfire Gala, because that apparently is leading into Kieran Gillen's crossover where the Eternals are hunting down the X-Men.
Yeah, there's always it that's the crazy thing about these big story arcs in the X-Men that I've picked up is like there's always some repercussions to the actions that the X-Men do. It's like they it's
Chris, do you
that's
want
gonna
to know
be
what the
interesting.
do you guys want to know what they showed off in the previews for this?
Sure.
The Eternals murder Hope
Oh.
and the rest of the five.
Man, if I didn't already hate the Eternals from that terrible movie, they're on my shit list now.
Well, Karen Gillan actually says, like, you are going to hate these Eternals. Like, they are unequivocally the villains of this story. Like, it's not like AVX where they tried to both sides of this shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I just saw that panel, and it's got Egg lying with a knife wound to his neck, bleeding out, and Hope dead. And I'm like, holy shit, they're going to start by removing their ability to resurrect, like give it stakes right away.
Yeah.
I know there's a
Oh.
backup team for Resurrection, but I forget who's on it.
Exactly. So that's why I'm not super worried, you know? But because the whole thing is Moira joins with Druig the Eternal, and she's feeding them information on how to hurt the X-Men the most. Because this is post Inferno and post X and li deaths and lives of Wolverine.
Right. Yeah.
So Moira, so people, I don't know if you remember this, because I just reread House and Powers, right?
Yes.
And in the scene where Destiny and Mystique murder Moira for creating the cure, and they warn her, like, I will always see you in every life. And then you find out that everything Moira's done, all about Krakoa, was a lie. And that was the huge twist of Inferno, was Moira never cared about creating a nation of mutants. Do you not
Yeah.
remember that?
I don't. I have not reread House
Okay.
or
No,
Powers in a
but
long
you also
time.
have to go back and reread Inferno, like
Yeah.
without the wait between episodes, because we find out that Moira's whole fucking thing was creating Krakoa and combining every mutant, and her plan was to use Krakoa to disseminate the cure and depower every mutant at once.
I don't remember that at all. I need to reread that.
Yeah, it's the scene where Mystique and her and Destiny take away her powers, and then Cypher comes to the rescue.
Yes.
It's fucking wild. It turns everything before it up on its head. And that's the real reason she refused to let any precogs on the island.
Because they would know. Yeah,
Yeah.
that's pretty great.
And I think that's like, you think the whole time it's just because Destiny and Mystique killed her before, and she's like, fuck Destiny, I'm never going to let her be part of this. And then you find out that no, because that was burned into her in the life of hers where she created the cure. And I think that's fucking awesome.
I love that they have seeded this and they have paid off the seeding of it.
That Hickman is king of seeding shit. That's
Yeah.
just what he does. So I'm super excited for this crossover. I am going to be sad because eventually the Krakoan era will end.
Yes.
And we'll go back to the old status quo of Charles Xavier's dream of coexistence and blah blah blah, which is fine, but I've never been so invested in this storytelling. I felt it's been incredibly just amazing, and I like that all of the villains are getting turns in the spotlight to show like what happens when you put together our petty squabbles and work together as one people, you know? And it's awesome because you get characters like Apocalypse, who also got retconned in X of Swords, where it was never about survival of the fittest, but it was when his wife, Genesis, seals him on the other side, away from all of them, and her instruction is, you know, take these mutants on this side and make them stronger, make them better so that you can come rescue us later. So Apocalypse's entire thing of survival of the fittest was never about like just baseline like genetics. It was always about making them stronger, which makes every failure of his actually a success. Because every time the X-Men banded together to defeat him, they got stronger and better. And so his
Yeah.
plan worked. And that's why if you go back and read the And again, this is all because I just reread Powers and House, where he walks in and he goes like, "You have finally become what I've always worked for," and he's like, and that's why he joins, because they have become strong, and that's what he was always working towards. And I just think that's fucking awesome.
You know what's a great Apocalypse moment is when it's him and Xavier and Magneto at that dinner.
Yep. The fancy, and he's in a fucking suit.
The fancy pants humans are like, no one remembers the Dark Ages. And he's like, well, that's because I killed everyone. So
yeah, he's like, no one cares about what happened to the Dark Ages. Like, well, you should. Why would happen? I did. And he's just like, but also just them all rolling up in suits and just.
Apocalypse has never been cooler, not even when he had his own age.
Yep. I will say one of my other favorite X-Men pre-Krakoa arcs was the Rick Remender's run with Evan.
Oh, Uncanny X-Force.
Uncanny X-Force, yep.
That was a really great series.
Anyway, I'm posting a picture in the Discord now. Because it's one of my favorite images from the Krakoa era. And it just, it's just, because it's like Josh said, Mr. Sinister. Like, all these characters get moments to shine when they're good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's great. It's just a great, I don't know, it's just great. And it is going to be disappointing to see if someone really drops the ball in the next X-Men, major X-Men arc. Because there's such great characters to build from.
I'm nervous because if Karen Gillan fucks it up and ruins the status quo as an end result to this crossover, I don't want to hate Karen Gillan.
Yeah.
But I will.
It'll be fine. I think
he's on
fine.
Notice.
I think it'll be fine. Everything's going to be fine.
Who do you think taught Apocalypse how to tie a tie?
He was born throughout all of existence. He knows how to tie a tie.
He's been wearing a bodysuit for a long time.
You don't forget.
I bet Charles put that knowledge in his brain. That's my headcanon for that. The X-Men have never been hotter than they are now.
Let's end with this, Chris. Yeah. What is your favorite X book pre and post Inferno? Because a lot of them got shifted around.
Oh, God, yeah. My favorite is still Marauders. Marauders was my favorite pre, and I really enjoy this team that they have developed, even though the team is... It's a crazy pants team. And like you, I have my concerns about Cassandra Nova, but I'm on it for Marauders.
Shout out to X-Factor, I think, is my favorite defunct series.
I really liked X-Factor, yeah.
And I really think X-Core got done dirty.
I did not like X-Core from the beginning, so
It only got 5 issues. It never got time to shine, but it was the series that made...
I like that concept. I like X-Corp's concept.
I did, too. I loved it.
The concept was great, but...
Great concept.
I think they executed it, too.
When X-Factor was a detective agency, I fucking
loved that. But that's what made the Krakoan era X-Factor great, too, is that they were a detective agency.
What they did was
they investigated mutant deaths.
Yeah, that was such a great, when it was Matt Murdock and Wolfsbane, when it was that shift, I think that was around Civil War. That was just a great concept.
I'm saying the new X-Factor, the Krakoan era, was the same thing.
Yeah.
They were a detective agency. But they investigated mutant deaths to find out what happened, because when they're resurrected, they don't remember
how they died. I will agree with you, Josh, about X-Factor Investigations.
Yeah, Peter David's just great.
The only problem X-Factor Investigations had was that was the era of crossovers and tie-ins. So X-Factor would gain a little momentum and be like, whoops, now we're in Civil War. Gain a little momentum.
Yeah, exactly.
Whoops, we're in Fear Itself.
Yeah, exactly. It was a mess.
Yeah, but I recently reread through all of X-Factor Investigations. It's tremendous.
It is. It really is.
How'd you reread it, Chris?
I bought them all on Comixology a long time ago.
Nice.
So I've had them on my Kindle for years.
Okay. Okay. But yeah, Krakoa era. Josh, have you been reading any Krakoa era books? Do you have favorites?
I do have favorites. I really like Marauders, and I really like I like Hellions as well. I think it's a lot of fun.
Hellions was a lot of fun for like a team of fuck ups.
Yeah.
It's just you're like, all right, this is fun. And I read a lot of the Dawn of X tie-ins, so
heard. For me, my favorites are Marauders. I think that I haven't been sold on the new era of Marauders where it's less sailing around, because the new series where it's like we're in Shi'ar space trying to find the original mutants, that's cool. That's fine. But it doesn't hit the same level of like intrigue for me where the original one had all the Hellfire like business intrigue and like political intrigue. And then you also had all the stuff with the Russians and Mikhail Rasputin and all the countries that didn't want to recognize Krakoa. So you had the Marauder ship going into international waters and like doing raids to rescue mutants and deliver drugs. Like, and then you had the Emma Frost side with the Sebastian Shaw stuff, like all that intrigue. And I thought that was just way more interesting. But this new era is only two books in, so I'm not going to really hold it against it yet. But old Marauders, pre-Inferno Marauders, is infinitely better at this point.
Yes. Do you
think... Then I love X-Factor, but also no one's talked about X-Force has been really good.
X-Force has been very consistent, but like I don't know that it's had any highs or lows. It's just a very solid book.
I don't know. I think the high of its opening episode where the mutants, the humans invade and murder Charles Xavier is fucking dope.
The most interesting thing for X-Force, in my opinion, has been the evolution of Quentin Quire and his relationships and how he's been changing his body every time he resurrects.
Yep.
Hmm. Matt,
like, especially as he was the standout of Wolverine and the X-Men.
Yeah. Do you think they've just dropped Mikhail? Because of the ongoing issues with Russia?
That's actually a very good point. But if anything, making him a villain is better.
Well,
because we still haven't seen the fallout of Colossus actually being a sleeper agent.
It's true.
Unknowingly.
I will put this out there. I would not be surprised if they just cold turkey dropped it because of everything that's happening.
And that's fair. I wouldn't really blame them for it. But making him a villain, I think, fits the prototype, but whatever.
Yeah.
I guess I hadn't realized that they hadn't mentioned him lately.
Yeah.
Huh. Neat.
So, yeah, the X-Men are pretty cool. We're not even talking about the New Mutants, the New X-Men.
Right, there's so many eras we never did.
Excalibur, Exile.
Okay, we'll end with this.
Yeah.
Give me your favorite mutant, and then give me the power you would want in real life.
Okay. Josh, go first.
Oh, Emma Frost.
She's your favorite mutant?
Yeah.
All right.
I love her story arc, especially in the Morrison run and the Whedon run.
What power would you want?
Quicksilver's power.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
Joke's on you. He ain't a mutant anymore. Doesn't count.
Josh wants to be a filthy inhuman.
I know, right? Still, I liked when Quicksilver was when he was classified as a mutant, his super speed and the way his brain moved so fast as well. And I know they tweaked it to like time manipulation. That's where his speed really comes from, is that he can manipulate time.
I like Quicksilver.
Yeah.
My favorite X-Men is it's Nightcrawler. I'm always a big fan of Nightcrawler. I think there's something about him that appeals to like, especially like a younger person. His look is just so very cool, and his teleporting is very cool.
Yeah.
If I could have a power, I'd want to have Kitty's intangibility. I think nice. that'd be kind of neat to just walk through walls.
It would be neat.
Just fuck with people.
For me, it's Gambit.
Of course.
I ever since the 90s cartoon, he's been one of my favorites. I just love the concept of him taking an everyday object and turning it into a deadly weapon of explosive force. And he's only gotten more badass in subsequent animated, like, moments. Like, I'll never forget the moment in X-Men Evolution where he's seducing Rogue. And she's about to kick his ass, and he grabs hold of the train. Because they're in a boxcar, and he charges the whole fucking thing. He's like, you can kick me out of this train. Good luck surviving it if you do. Because Gambit in X-Men Evolution was one of the acolytes of Magneto.
Yes.
Yeah, and man, and that power, that his true potential is scary. It's like Jubilee's true potential. Like, she's like splitting atoms.
My favorite recent Gambit thing is that scene of him and Destiny, where Destiny's talking about how much she fucking hates him.
Yes, because she has a soft spot for Rogue, because it's basically like her stepdaughter.
It is. It's her adopted daughter.
And so she's like, fucking Gambit, you're better than that. And he's like, suck a dick.
It's like one of the laugh out loud moments of the.
Yeah. So my power for real life, not as flashy as yours, but I always thought about like what would actually work best and benefit you most in a real world scenario. And I've come to two conclusions, either domino / long shots, luck based ability. Mm-hmm. Oh, changing probability, so things in your life just work out without you even trying. Like, think about it. Like, money, not an issue. Romance, not an issue. Like, just business dealings, like, everything in your life works out whether you want it to or not. And I think that's awesome.
What's the name of that guy from DuckTales?
The brother, Gladfoot.
Yeah.
Yeah, say that's basically what it is.
It is.
And then when he loses his powers, he's like, I can't believe you. I opened up my wallet to pay for lunch and a $20 bill didn't just magically fly in it. How do you people live?
Okay. Yeah,
anyway, and the other option is Cypher, omnilingual translation. The ability to speak and translate anything innately and perfectly. And I'm talking recent Cypher, like Krakoa era Cypher, where he can be, he's like the world's best cyber hacker because he speaks in code and like in binary and can talk to machines. And he is one of the best hand-to-hand combat fighters because he can read body language and facial tics and sense the language of your body, so he knows what you're going to do before you do it. Like, it's all those little bullshit like ways that they interpreted like language, like language, and just in real life, that would be amazing to perfectly speak any dialect and be amazing with computers and stuff like that. Like, I just think in a real life scenario, that would be such an awesome ability.
God, yeah, it would be so good.
So though I've thought about that for a while, because yeah, it'd be cool to shoot laser beams and stuff and blah blah blah, but I think luck and Cypher's ability would just translate to some really good quality of life moments in a real world scenario.
And yeah, that's our X-Men episode.
That's the X-Men. Yep. We'll be, we have to figure out what the next program will be. I don't know. I think we've hit all the major franchises, so we'll have to look.
We'll deeper. Figure something out.
Yeah. But yeah,
we can talk about Final Fantasy.
We could talk about Final
Fantasy. We'll have a lot to talk about next week.
Yeah. Okay, let's make next week the Final Fantasy program.
Sure.
All right. Until then, good night, everyone.
Good night.
Night. Night.